Hello, Miranda Tetlow here from ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory. My guest today comes from a long line of great Territorians. Austin Chin is the third generation of his family to be born here, with his great-grandparents coming over from China in the late 1800s. The family has been front and centre of top-end life ever since, and last year I spoke to Austin just as the family were finding more pieces to their family history puzzle.
Oh, yeah, basically what happened is, I don't know why, but when I was growing up, or most Chinese kids growing up, the parents never really spoke much about history. And particularly in regards to Granny Lam Loy, the famous great Granny Lam Loy, her husband died in a horse and cart accident. He was an engineer from China working at the mines. And that's all we knew of him. We never knew him at all. And he was apparently killed in a horse and cart accident. And then just not that long ago, someone said, oh, they saw a sign down at Pine Creek Cemetery, whether it was on a headstone or was it on a historical sign, but it mentioned a Chinese bloke getting killed in a horse and cart accident. So we're going to go down Friday and see if we find it.
And so you think this is your great-grandfather's grave?
Yeah, probably be a good chance. Hopefully, they mentioned he might have been an engineer also. Yeah, there wouldn't be that too many of those.
So all these little scraps of information, do you know much else about his story at all?
Oh, absolutely. very proud of the fact that I was born in Australia, but even more so to have this Chinese cultural background. And I've been learning all about it. And lucky to have both sides of the story.
So introduce me to your great-grandparents. Who were they and what brought them to Australia?
Basically, in Chinese history, immigration history, is usually the people from the poorer southern regions of China, the agricultural village type thing, and usually the eldest son would go and look for gold in California or Bendigo. And, there's an interesting story. I sort of jump all over the place here, but in 1874 was the first boatload of indentured labour to come into the territory. And the reason they brought in indentured labour was because they couldn't find Aussies or Caucasians to come up into Darwin back then. You know, imagine, you know, there's no air conditioning, no running water, all that sort of thing, to work and live in Darwin. So they decided to bring in indentured labour. Well, the indentured labour worked on the Overland Telegraph and the railway. Well, when they were digging around Pine Creek, they found gold. And then word got out, Chinese whispers, I suppose, and before you knew it, there was a big influx of Chinese coming over, free settlers, looking for gold. And with them came along the tailors and the laundrymen and, you know, like the old Western America.
So a whole wave of immigrants.
Yeah. And like I said, mainly from southern China. And I'm really glad they came.
Well, I'm glad they came too, and I'm glad that you're here today.
Yeah.
You mentioned great Granny Lam Loy, who is one of the great characters, I think, of Darwin history. Tell me a little bit about her story.
Oh, look, I was probably growing up, I would have been probably about eight years old, and old Taipo, which is what we called her in Chinese, she just had that big hat she wore all the time and her Chinese traditional clothing still with an apron. And she's always in the garden there doing something. She had such a wonderful, wicked smile. It was just something you could, you know, every time you think of her, you just think of that really cheeky smile she had.
What summed up her sense of humour, do you think?
I don't know. I think she would have had a very hard life. Her daughter, Lizzie, she actually was highly intelligent in the fact that she was the only Chinese person available to translate in the courts back in those days. And she got very high academic achievements when she was at school. And so I'd say Granny's smile came from her intelligence.
And yeah. She was also a very hard worker, wasn't she? What did she do?
Oh, well, sample, and I'd be like, you know, washing down my panel van. She'd come up and say, oh, you going to town? I said, no, I'm washing the car. Okay, and she just starts to walk off with her big bag, which she finds things along the way. And, start the car. Oh, yeah, I'm going to town. Oh, good. And she jumps in. And, yeah, so she didn't expect anything. And you know, I mentioned the big bag, and she'd come back and she'd collect all these Coke bottles. And if the bag got overflowing, she'd hide it in the long grass and bring it back. And she's very, very astute, very good at saving money. Another classic example of her intelligence, and I call it intelligence, is that my mum and dad had a shop in Stewart Park. And that's another story. And she used to come in and exchange all the new decimal currency for the old shillings and that. Yeah, no worries. She'd come in, I'd open the till and... And we find out later the old coins had silver in it, and the new decimal coins, except for the 50 cents. she knew where the value was.
And so where did she stash all these coins?
Ooh, she stashed it where no one could find it. she did it old school. She buried it in the garden.
Don't trust banks, Austin.
No, she doesn't trust the bank. No, that's old school. You know, in the old days, you just had to be careful.
Tell me what happened after Cyclone Tracy. She had all this money stashed in the garden.
She happened to be in Sydney. Like, she's never ever left Darwin as long as I know, except for when they bombed Darwin, and she obviously left. But so we knew she buried everything in the garden. So my uncles rung her and said, look, Granny, we've had a cyclone up here and they're going to bulldoze the garden and everything. So we need you to tell us where you put all the coins and... Or the treasures, you know, or what you buried in the backyard. And she's sort of like, a cyclone, eh?
Yeah, yeah, but the other one.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you've got to watch these grandchildren and trying to get your money. But, I think she did sort of give an idea of where it was. And they found a few, but... the uncles reckon there's a major one. It's probably like five times deeper, and yeah. And they went through with a metal detector, and so they found a fair bit of it. But yeah, she was like when you're growing up, she was just great grandma, right? Yeah, nothing special. But now thinking back, she was very special.
What was her garden like, Austin?
Lots of mango trees. She used to have a mango plantation. Everything you can eat, like, you know, forget any trees you're growing and there's no fruit of it. Yeah, so four corner, guava. She used to have lots and lots of chickens and she'd used to poo for fertilizer. She used to burn all the crab shells after we had a big crab feast back in those days, and apparently the crab shells, when you burn it, become excellent fertilizer. Yeah, and what amazed me was that she was almost skin and bones. I don't know if you've seen a photo of her, but she was just almost skin and bones, but she's very healthy and she's very strong for, I don't know how she did it. She was just Granny when I was growing up, and yeah.
Well, I walk past almost every week some of the houses, the flats that were named for her in Stewart Park. Mm. And I've heard that her funeral was one of the biggest that Darwin has ever seen. What do you remember about that?
Well, she lived in Stewart Park behind Tang Store in Henry Street. And she had this little old house that she lived in. And as little kids, it was really dark and gloomy. I don't even think, she might have had one light globe in there, but it was really scary going in there because she had all the stuff she collected, right? And I think I got my hoarding disease from her. But, oh, we'd find jars of marbles and, oh, it was like Aladdin's cave. And I don't think we were supposed to be in there because we were scared that she might catch us in there. But, yeah, so when she died, she was a very well-known character around Darwin. She used to walk everywhere and she was very distinguishable. And so when she died, she part of tradition is to take the body or the deceased past all the significant places they lived or worked. And obviously Tang's door and her home was one of them. But what happened was that so the cortege went past down the street highway, down Henry Street, and then turned left. I think it's Coronation, I don't know what it is, the first left, and then back on Australia Street, and it backed up on itself, right? And then I'm pretty sure we had traffic lights back then, and so the procession was coming down the Stuart Highway to turn down Henry Street following the hearse, and then but we came back up Australia Street and we actually choked the whole traffic system.
You needed police officers in attendance.
Oh, there were police officers there. Yep, they knew it was going to be a biggie. But, yeah, on the motorbikes back those days. But, yeah, it was a very, very, very big procession. Yeah, she was highly respected by everyone. She was very, she tended the Joss House very regularly. Yeah, so.
Sounds like it was a funeral that befit a very special woman.
Ah, she wouldn't have expected it. And the funny thing too, I think leading up to her funeral, I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure it was I can't even remember what month it was, but it bucketed down. Like we had a tropical downpour. And I think it was why the date was important. I think it was not the wet season, but and Chinese believe if it rains on a special occasion, it's special, it's lucky. Probably reverse psychology there, I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. It sounds like another sign from above.
Yeah, no. I think so.
You're listening to Late Lunch. Miranda Tetlow's my name, and with me today is Austin Chin, remembering his great-granny Lumloy, who was a great Darwin character. Austin, you mentioned your parents ran a store in Stuart Park. What do you recall of the store?
In the old days, early days, I do sort of digress a bit. So, yeah, in the early days, all the aunties, all the uncles and Chinese men in Darwin, back, I would say, in the 50s, 60s, when they wanted to find a wife, they would go to Hong Kong to find a wife. Had nothing to do with racism or anything. The main reason was because of culture. You know, my grandfather was very traditional. And, yeah, and so there'd be no issue with cultural traditions and stuff like that. And that's the main reason. So Dad went over. He just finished high school and he was going to start uni. And he went over to my Uncle Sid, who's passed on now. And Uncle Sid was going over to get married. Well, cut long story short, Dad met Mum, and then it became a double wedding. And when Mum came back it's really funny, I was cleaning out Dad's stuff and I found all these things where he used to take Mum to the opera and to the pictures, all the tickets and everything.
What a romantic.
Yeah, I thought that was romantic. But so when they came back to Australia and landed in Darwin Airport in 1955, the story goes that Mum saw the tin shacks and everything coming from Hong Kong and said, "No, I'm not staying here." Right, that's Mum, and that's she's always up front. And Dad said, "Look, just stay 2 years, right? Just stay 2 years," because Dad was obviously you know, in love, and he's got to look after this lady, and she said she didn't want to stay here, so he convinced her to stay 2 years. Well, Dad worked in the public service back then, and he, when he knocked off from work, he built this little shop on Stewart Park, and it's still there. Survived the cyclone, survived the fire also, in the early days, called it C.S. Foy's. And Dad's Chinese name was Foy, and there's like this big Foy's shopping centre down in Sydney, an old Foy's store. And so I think he sort of played on that, but he called it CS, Chin Shui Foy's. That's what the CS stood for. And Mum, being an enterprising little Hong Kong Chinese girl, she started a little gift shop. And back in those days, a lot of the Stewart Park area was, because it's an older suburb in Darwin, Stewart Park, was had a very large Greek population. So Mum ended up learning to speak fluent Greek. She learned to write Greek. She used to argue with the Greeks in Greek. And she was an amazing business person, and she genuinely loved her customers. She had this rule. If someone comes into the shop and asks for something and it happens twice, she'll get it, because when the third person come in, she'll say, yes, I got that. And she knew where everything was. She was never afraid to try anything. She used to write all these signs all around the place, but she'd spell it wrong. And I'm sure people came in just to see those signs. But she had things hanging off the ceiling. So to cut a long story short, we were here in the Cyclone Tracy. So she stayed a bit more than 2 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, what got her over the line? Yeah, shop?
I think it's just her personality and nature and her love for Dad. He built the shop. Knocked off from work and built the shop. We survived the cyclone. We were in that shop during the cyclone. And, I think it was mutual respect and love. And obviously our family. She got on real well with anyone. Yeah. Mum just had that knack. That was my mum. Yeah, she was a really strict mum. Yeah. I remember she used to, if I did something wrong, she'd say, put your hand out. And she'd had this feather duster cane, those old, and you sort of go, oh, which hand sort of like can take it, you know, and you put it out. And then it's just through natural survival, when you saw that duster coming down, you pull your hand away and you go, whoosh, like, bloody hell, she wasn't taking it easy, like, all right, put it back, put it back, and same thing again. It's just natural self-preservation. Your hand just jumps out of there. You go, whoosh. Oh, my God. But definitely she wasn't going to let me get away without getting the smack.
Were you a bit of a mischief maker, Austin?
Yes, I think I was, thinking back in hindsight and being honest with myself, yeah.
What kind of mischief was made?
My friends bought motorbikes, and So I bought a motorbike too, and we kept it in the park just behind the shop. The park's still there, and there's about three motorbikes there. And Mum goes, there's motorbikes over there. I think they must have been stolen or something. There must be, you know, someone must have stolen them and put them there. And I said, oh, yeah. And she goes, I think I better call the police. And, I'll find out who owns them. I'll go across to the other shop. No, I think I'll call the police. Right, so she rings the police. She goes, hello, Mr. Policeman. I think there's some stolen motorbikes in our backyard. Right, yeah, okay, Mum. You know, like, all right. So I just, you know, ignored it. And next minute, like 10 minutes later, the cops come around. So I had to jump in action. So, I found out who owns them. They're going to move it. Oh, okay.
Sounds like she was onto you.
Oh, you know, she tricked me. But, she brought up four boys.
Where did you come in the four boys?
I'm the eldest. Yep. So, yeah. So I had to do all the things that the eldest son had to do, and then just, you know, did all the work when Dad wanted things done. But I think I learned from that. Yeah.
What were your responsibilities then growing up?
Oh, not fighting with brothers. That was a pretty big one. Dad used to smack all of us. Like, if we had a fight, he didn't try to find out who was wrong or who was right, and he just smack all of us. So I think that system sort of worked. Very Chinese. And we actually got the belt and sometimes the belt buckle. So I don't know, just basically being a good little Chinese boy, I suppose. That was my job. Yeah, helping mum and all that sort of stuff and not getting into trouble.
Darwin sounded like an incredible playground for kids back then.
Oh, absolutely.
Tell me about the time you found a bomb on Kavanagh Street, was it?
Yeah. Well, that's nothing, mate. We just found the bomb, and it was empty because we lifted it, me and my cousin Victor. And I think we picked it up in the long grass just across the road there, and we left it outside the door of ABC.
Did you?
Yeah.
It seemed to survive. The building survived.
But talking about finding something dangerous, my cousin Victor, who I grew up with and whose mum owned a Hong Kong cafe, and it's just been on Facebook recently, all the old Darwin folks remember Hong Kong Cafe. My cousin Victor found a box of detonators, right? And being my best friend, he shared half this box of detonators with me, right? We didn't know what they were detonators. So we're, like, using them as whistles and whatever. They just looked really interesting. Anyway, my uncle came up, and he saw what we had, and he grabbed it off us and said, "Where'd you get these?" Victor said, "Oh, he found it in a drain. There was a big drain running down Nucky Street in those days, an open drain, and he'd found it." Victor finds everything. Like, we'd be walking along right, and I'd walk over a Parker Pen, but he'd find it, like, you know, "Oh, look what I just found," you know. Victor was always like, he ended up becoming the first Australian-born Chinese policeman in New South Wales. But anyway, I digress again. And so the police came around, and Victor had to show them where he found it. And it it was in this open drain, and I'm not insinuating anything, but there were a lot of workers there, so someone must have stolen and hid it in the drain and didn't allow for Victor to come along. Yeah.
And make for one of those only in the territory moments of your childhood.
Oh, well, I might have been not sitting here now talking to you. I'd be in a coffin somewhere with my head blown off.
It sounds like you had a few lucky moments like
that. Yeah, yeah. And these close calls, I had probably had three close calls in my life.
And a little bit earlier in our conversation, Austin, you mentioned Cyclone Tracy. What was your experience of that?
We had a shop, a gift shop, and Christmas Eve. So we'd been busy selling Christmas presents, and Mum was shutting up shop about 10 o'clock because she'd always open the door for someone coming in for a late Christmas present they'd forgot. And the weather started getting very rainy and stormy and howly. Yeah, it was getting really loud, and they said, "Listen to the radio, right? Radio 8N, you know, ABC, and to have updates and everything." And they said, "Oh, cyclone warning number, can't remember what it was. Winds are getting stronger and everything." And I think it started leaking in the shop, and we run around putting buckets everywhere. And then on the news, radio came and said, "Oh, the Buff Club has just lost its roof." And this was about 11:30 at night. And this is getting pretty serious. So got to the point where I ran out of buckets. We're putting plastic sheets over everything. I think the roof went in the shop. And that's when we all went into the little storeroom around the side there. It's all still there. And we just squeezed into the shelving and everything. And the roof was, where we were, was going up. And then when it went up, you saw the lightning and the rain came in, and then it slammed down. And then that would happen when another gust comes through, the roof would go up and you see all the lightning, the rain coming in. And mum prayed. First time I ever heard my mum pray, obviously why she did. And then I don't remember the eye coming through, so I don't know if we had the eye, but around about 6 o'clock, I got up and mum said, no, get up, might be still, you know, dangerous. And I said, no, that's all right, mum. I would just have a quick look around and opened the door and I looked around. I couldn't believe it. The whole tank store was a big pile of rubble. My uncle's house was blown away and I started laughing. Like, you know, it was just, I suppose it's called being hysterical. You know, my God, like, unbelievable. And my mum go, what's wrong? What are you laughing? I said, mum, come have a look at this. Yeah, it was quite an amazing night. But my dad's shop survived.
Isn't that amazing?
Credit to him.
I'm curious, how do you think about life now, especially with all the close calls you've had over the years?
Look, all right, I'll digress again. The coronavirus, to me, has a silver lining. And the silver lining is that it's been a wake-up call. So this does relate to your question. And the wake-up call is that we used to take friends and family, having dinner together, shaking hands, hugging, kissing friends and relatives for granted. We've just now realised, hey, mate, we miss that. So my answer to what I think of life is, I don't know, just live your life to the fullest and as long as you don't hurt someone. I actually, didn't meet him personally, but saw him when he came to Darwin, the Dalai Lama. And the Dalai Lama is probably the wisest man in the world, in fact. Well, I reckon. And in fact, when he walked in the room, he just, I don't know, infected the whole hall. Like, he saw this little kid with a mohawk with coloured purple, green or whatever, and he looked at this kid and he pointed at him and just started laughing, right? And it just affected the whole room and maybe similar to my tape or my granny. He's happy. He's made you feel happy. My granny's smile made us feel happy. And so I said, oh, well, I've got to find out what the meaning of life is. So, you know, old Google came out. I was hoping one of the school kids was going to ask him the question, but none of them asked what the meaning of life was. I Googled the Dalai Lama's meaning of life. He said the meaning of life is this. When you wake up in the morning and you go throughout your day, and if you manage to help one person, two person, maybe three person, four, maybe more, to improve their life, that's the meaning of life. You help others. You make other people's lives better. Okay. Well, you've done it again, Dalai Lama.
We'll all take that. That's the meaning of life.
Yeah. So helping others. Yeah, that's life.
How has that lived out in your life, Austin?
I tell you what, mate. When I've been helped, when I've been in trouble, I tell you what, mate, I am so grateful. So if I can help someone in some way, I know they'll be grateful. And I think that's helped me in life a real lot. Helping others and not expecting anything in return, but you know, the karma thing and everything. And if they don't return the favour, they're probably an arsehole anyway, and I just stuffed up helping them.
Austin Chin, I think that's something to live by, and I've loved talking to you today. Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, no worries. It was a pleasure.
Austin Chin, part of a big Territory family. I think Austin is the third generation to be born here, but the line continues on with his own daughters and grandkids.